This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best tasting protein out there. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 152. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off, with us this week is Cassandra Forsyth from CassandraForsyth.blogspot.com and also CassandraForsyth.com. What's up, Cass?
Not much. It's Sunday and it's raining.
Tony and I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Tony, we have Jonathan Fass of AcceleratedStrength.com.
Good segue.
What's up, John?
Yankees are undefeated in the postseason. Giants go today.
That's all right.
Giants go today.
That's off topic. Oh, we didn't record off topic. We'll do that at the end. I totally forgot to do that. Whoops. And then we have Tony Gentilcore of the new shiny, brand spanking new.
I'm giving myself a clap, finally. It's been 2 years.
Woohoo!
TonyGentilcore.com.
I was wondering that email was going to come.
I no longer have the longest web address in history. It's just TonyZonacore.com now.
So this all came up because you were no longer sponsored by Reebok. You had to move on.
Exactly.
I hear you, man. I feel you. You got to pay the bills. And last but not least, we have Lee Peel of LeePeel.com.
I'm looking at pictures of guys giving gang signs right now.
Oh.
That's my contribution to the show.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
It's a forward email. There's nothing I can do. You know, I get forward email of very interesting things, and white guys with gang signs is sometimes one of them.
You mean you actually get email, Lee?
Yeah.
Like, you receive it, and it comes back?
Every once in a while, it'll come through.
A truck delivers the email to Lee's house.
Once a month.
Just drop off a hard drive full of email.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, I get forward email, you know.
Yeah,
stuff
what's
that,
up
like,
with this picture of me that shows up this Photoshop?
Oh my God, that was really funny. Did you see that on my wall?
Oh, the guy's head, his head on some guy's body?
And you know, it looks pretty good. I mean, I have to say, it wasn't that bad.
The hair?
You know, you look a little beefy.
Who sent that in? Debbie Roundtree?
Roundtree. She's going to be very happy to
Debbie,
be mentioned.
Debbie, you're on my shit list now. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Wow.
Sorry.
Swear to fail.
Started off right, Kevin.
5 minutes in, or two mm-hmm. minutes in. All right.
Can count.
Again, we have a full cast this week, and normally my counter thing is showing up on the side, but it wasn't for a second. But anyways, we alluded to it last week a little bit. I think Cass broke the silence on this, but I'm leaving Boston Sports Club in Woburn, which I'm very happy about.
Yay!
Congratulations.
Not because BSC is a bad place to work. It's a great place to get your feet wet in the industry, but I'm going to be going to a much nicer place at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning right down the street from where I currently work. So it's obviously a much better opportunity, much better facilities. I have a great staff to learn from, and that was one of the big factors. I get to obviously learn from some of the best coaches out there, Mike being one of them, and also John Paloff is there. So it's going to be I'm very excited. I can't wait to start, and it's been a crazy couple last 2 weeks trying to get all this stuff worked out, and you know, now I won't have any more stories. Although, very interesting, the sink guy was at BSC yesterday as I went to the bathroom before training. So, as I again had to go to the bathroom, he was making his and for some reason he has the clearest throat and like shake his body while his genitals are over the sink every time I'm in that locker room.
Did you bid him a fond farewell?
I gave him a hug, actually, while we're in the bathroom. Just, you know, I gave him like that, man, you know, hand thing with the one fist behind hug.
The thug hug.
The male locker room is a different world altogether, and there's some weird cats in the male locker room.
There are some weird cats.
I remember, well, when I worked in New York, there was a guy before he would train on the floor. He would be in the men's locker room in just his underwear doing push-ups on the floor. Every time. It was like, I'm like, oh, I just don't understand some guys.
Yeah. He's got to get his pump before he gets his pump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did he wear sleeveless shirts?
Did he?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Next thing I want to quickly talk about is I just threw up a quick plug on TRX training. I've been having a blast training in my garage lately. I have four kettlebells, the TRXs, foul slides, bands, and I'm going to be grabbing a med ball, like a 5-kilogram med ball, to complete my home gym in the next couple weeks. And you know what? And someone called me out on Facebook or something saying that I was dogging on the TRX before, and the only reason why I ever talked down on the TRX at all was because for push-ups I like the blast straps more because they're two independent kind of strands that come down from above, and that's the only reason why I said it. I've been honestly, like, the craziest thing is I did a plank in the TRX, and I can hold a plank for like 2 minutes no problem. I could barely hold a plank in the TRX for 40 seconds without, you know, convulsing.
Oh yeah, those things are wicked.
So, you know, if people are still on the edge, I really think you should check out the TRX, and we'll have Chris back on again in a couple weeks to do a follow-up to kind of talk about my experience with him, and if we have any questions from the listeners, that would be the time to talk about it. Lee, you got this Body by Eats thing. What's up with that?
It is releasing Wednesday.
You have a great voice, by the way. I've been listening to the audiobook.
Oh, thank you. I tried really hard on that.
How long did that take you?
It took me a really long time. I did it in three different sessions that lasted about like 2.5 to 3 hours each.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So, but I was very hoarse by the end of the second parter. I was about to die. But yeah, no, it's I love that you had the audio. Like, here's Kevin. Send Kevin the book. Send Kevin the book, and Kevin's like, "Do you have this on audio?"
Well, I'm gonna review the audio portion because I drive 30 minutes back and forth to work, and
no, I'm the same way. I just think it's funny because no one else asked that but you.
And especially with ebooks. Whenever I get like an ebook, like one of the first things I generally do is I go to Staples and I print it out because I just have, I either like to hear it audibly or I don't like sitting at my desk. That's a problem, or I'll have to take my computer like downstairs and sit on the couch and read something. Like, I can do it that way. That's how I've read some of Alan Aragon's research reviews, but I'm just like a total nerd for that stuff. Like, I can listen to podcasts all day. My eyes are too lazy to read.
I have a hard time reading on the computer.
I hate reading on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Hate it.
Mm. Yeah.
So. Younger generations can do it, though.
Isn't it silly? I'm 23 years old.
No, but there's like the physician I work for, his daughter, who's 9. She can open up a computer and do things with a computer that I'm like, what? What did you just do? And she just, you know, can design stuff and figure how to use things. She uses his iPhone. I mean, it's just a different brain that these kids have nowadays because they grow up with computers.
I think,
yes,
it's just
Kevin,
laziness.
You're only 10 years old too, but the rest of us who are in our 30s, you know, you know,
That was a nice little thing she interjected there.
It's laziness.
I caught it.
It's not laziness. It's just we've learned different ways of thinking. Like, when I study, I have to write things down to remember them, but younger kids type everything out. You know what I mean? I don't know. Different brains out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish I had one of those brains.
Oh, same thing. Well, I can sit down. Like, one of the things I've been still going through, a lot of them is the and Tony, I've been meaning to talk to you about this, but the stuff that Anthony's been doing with the strength and conditioning webinars.com, where, yeah. You know, like, it just had some fantastic presentations with, like, Gray Cook and Alan Cosgrove just did another webinar, whatever they're called, this past week. And I totally dig those because I can, like, bang it out in 50 minutes if I bring my laptop to work in between clients. I can just watch a seminar and, you know, take notes on a little thing on the side on the computer. And I think those are really cool. If you haven't checked those out, it's definitely worth
giving
a look. So anyways, Lee, when's the book coming out? It's like Tuesday, right?
Wednesday. I said that earlier, but yeah, Wednesday. In this call, I said it too.
Called you out.
Yeah.
Well, I live in the future where I've already listened to 2/3 of the book. So.
Yeah, you can go back with Aini and listen to it all over again.
Back to the Future is a great movie, and I had a dream about Back to the Future the other day, but we're not going to talk about it. But I was only going to say, like, if you ever did like some kind of parody, and you know somehow you overshot the date that you were gonna, John, shut up.
You know, this makes perfect sense to me now. I've always wondered why we record the off topic first.
Because I have to get this out, man.
You have to get this stuff out of your mind. Yeah. So this has to be like now we're doing like an off topic.
Okay, what we'll do? We're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna record off topic. Then we're gonna do the mailbag. We'll be right back. All right, now we're into the mailbag. The first question we have is going to be going to John. It's from Ty or Tay.
Well, Freaky Ty was from The Lost Boys, and he was a guy. So I vote Ty.
I haven't seen that one. I'll take your word for it. I know, fail. Hey, guys. I just recently found your blog, and it is really great. About 7 years ago, I woke up one day weighing 330 pounds. I hired a trainer / nutritionist and honestly lost 100 pounds in a little over 3 months. I lost another 65 pounds over the next few months. I have managed to keep the weight off over the years because I changed my lifestyle. I didn't go on a diet, and my trainer used a combination of cardio and resistance tubing for workouts. Of course, he also taught me how to eat healthy and responsibly. So I guess you did kind of go on a diet.
I was thinking that too.
My question is, when walking, running, etc., cardio exercise, isn't time more important than distance? In other words, isn't it more important to focus on how long I run or walk than how far I do so?
First, congratulations. It's just an awesome achievement, whether you dieted or not, but you probably kind of did. But absolutely awesome achievement. So congratulations and keep that up. As far as the actual question goes, whether time or distance, it actually is the distance, and time has very little to do with it. You get a lot of the internet stories of, well, you can walk 5 miles or run 5 miles and it'll all be the same calories. And they've actually done research on that, and it is true. There is a very small non-statistical difference between as far as like calories burned between running and walking. So it has to do with the distance. Time is more of a factor of what do you want to accomplish? Do I want to walk for an hour or do I want to, you know, jog for 10 or 15 minutes to cover the same distance? If time is not a factor, then honestly, it doesn't matter in terms of calorie burn. So then the other consideration that you might have is what other things might you want to improve upon when you're doing your cardio? So am I concerned about more of a systems training, you know, cardiorespiratory effect, or aerobic versus, you know, like an aerobic versus maybe an interval aerobic and anaerobic kind of argument in terms of interval sprints and things like that. So you can consider those things when you're deciding what kind of cardio you're going to do. But as far as just burning calories, just look at your distance, and that's what you're interested in.
Very good. Let's go to the next question. Oh, sorry, Lee.
Sorry, I was on mute. That was my bad. Not coming up. Can you read it, Kevin? It's not coming up. My page is stalled.
John, I got you another question.
Okay, then.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I have a question for Jonathan. I'm a serious marathon runner. I ran a 2:50 this past summer, which is averaging 6 minutes and 30 seconds per mile. Generally, I race in the summer. I spend most of the fall and winter running less mileage, but spending more time in the gym. Then I boost up the mileage in the spring and the summer. In the fall, winter, I focus on core strength as well as glute hamstring strength It keeps me from becoming quad dominant, prevents injuries when I ramp up the mileage. I mainly do squats and deadlifts to strengthen the posterior chain. I know these numbers aren't impressive, but then again, I weigh 150 pounds. I currently do 5 sets of 5 squats at 185 and 2 sets of 5 deadlift at 170. I have 3 quick questions. One, is it normal for my squats to be so much heavier than my deadlifts? What other exercises should I be doing? I sometimes do Bulgarian split squats, lunges, and leg presses, but focus on the squat and the deadlift. Are those the best for glute hamstring strength? Should I do less reps, more weight, or less weight, more reps? Or is what I am doing good? Thanks a lot. Look forward to your answer, Sal.
Sal, nice numbers there as far as you're running. I mean, it looks like you are pretty much a serious marathon runner, so I'd say that you're doing a good job. And Tony, I'd love to hear your input on this too. I mean, I think let's look at the first question. Is it normal for squats to be so much heavier than deadlifts? The answer is it depends. I mean, people are built differently. So people with longer legs may be good at one thing. You know, maybe squats are a little bit better. Deadlifts might be harder based on positioning. People that are shorter or stockier may be better at deadlifts than they are at squats. It's relative. Having said that, is there something with your form that you could improve upon? I don't know. If that's the case, then maybe you can start to bump those numbers. So in general, we usually see that deadlifts might be a little bit more than squats, but it really does matter on your actual size and shape to really determine what's going on there. As far as what other exercises should you be doing, I think in general your focus is correct. Lunges, I would go forwards and backwards because you want a forward lunge will work more eccentrically, so you're looking at a deceleration, which is very important in running. Half of what you're doing is accepting force through the quads, through the glutes as you hit the ground and start to flex the knee to bend the knee, and then you push off through the posterior chain and quads as well. In terms of being quad dominant versus hip dominant, everything has to work. So although I think your exercises are probably pretty good, I used to focus more on that kind of stuff. I don't know that I do as much anymore. I think that everything just needs to be balanced and in order. We can't predict injury, and we can't necessarily say what will be injury preventative versus non, but I think right now what you just need to do is look at strengths and weaknesses, determine what that is. Sometimes you can use someone else that's good at evaluation because it can be hard for us individually to do that. But in general, I think your exercises are probably pretty good. I would focus on a lot of front loading stuff, so front squats over maybe necessarily back squats, because you also want to make sure that the rest of the body is strong as well. And it's not just about what's going on at my hips, what's going on at my quads, but going on going through everything. Core is going to be exceptionally important for a runner as well. And then third, less reps, more weight, or less weight, more reps. There's no real evidence to suggest one over the other, and people use different philosophies to determine what they're going to do, different coaches. I tend to be more of, if you're doing a lot of volume training, then we want to work on intensity, so the weight. But other people will look at it and say, you know what, you're a volume athlete, so you need to work on your endurance. So personally, I would probably say that, you know, 5 to 8 reps, somewhere around there is probably where you're good at. Certainly, you can periodize what you're doing. So initially off after the season, you could start maybe with some more weight to build yourself up into that power and strength area, and then start to ease it off into more of like that 5 to 8 to even 10 rep range as you start to get into your season. But in general, that's the way that I would go. Build on your strength, because over a season you're building a lot of quality of endurance. So the off season should be about reclaiming strength and balance.
And I would wholeheartedly agree with Jonathan. And first of all, I got to say it's pretty refreshing to see that Sal is actually taking this approach. A lot of times, especially in the endurance athletes I dealt with, they only feel like the only way to get better is to add more mileage. So it's really great to see that he's actually taking away days that he's running and replacing it with strength training, because there's been a lot of research that shows when runners do that, they improve the running economy. Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to force development. So a rate of force development. So the more force they're able to generate into the ground, the faster they're going to go forward as they're running. So the fact that he's including all this weight training is fantastic. And I think the approach that he's taking as far as incorporating squats and deadlifts and various lunges is spot on. I mean,
yeah.
Half the time what I'm seeing are leg extensions, leg curls, not really emphasizing any progressive overload whatsoever, and he is. So while certainly his squat, I mean, and John already alluded to this, like as far as his squat being higher than his deadlift, it's going to be on leverages and body type. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, as far as what he needs to be hitting, you know, as John said, yeah, more decelerative stuff is, or accelerative stuff is going to be fantastic. And I think with sets and reps, why not just do both? You know, I think more of an undulated approach is going to be the way to go for most athletes anyways. Certainly when your mileage is high, I would focus on less volume in the gym.
Right.
And then vice versa. When his mileage is low, you can get a little bit more volume in the gym. So certainly I hope those tips help, but it seems to me that Salah has a pretty good head on his shoulders. He's approaching it the right way. So kudos to him.
All righty. The next question is to Lee. I'm a new listener to the FitCast, but the episodes I've heard so far are great, so kudos to everyone for that. My question goes back a couple of episodes to when Lee was talking about protein content of pre- and post-workout meals. Using the numbers y'all talked about, my post-workout meal could range anywhere from about 30 grams to 130 grams. My roommate seems adamant that your body can only process about 30 to 35 grams per hour, so it is pointless to consume more than that in a post-workout. Is this true? I'm 21 years old, 6 foot, and 177 pounds, if that makes any difference in protein digestion. I'm also eating 6 to 8 meals a day and weight training 4 to 6 times a week. Thanks a lot. Great podcast. And that is Stacy from Texas.
I don't quite remember where I said you could have 130 grams. And I don't know what formula would have come out to 130 grams. So not trying to be mean, but you may have heard something wrong there. As far as maximum amount of protein intake, there's been a lot of research to this, and you know, just to touch on it quickly, the thing with the research with protein intake is that not only do you have to take into consideration when you're doing this research mixed meals, then you have to take in types of protein, and then you have to take in if the person is training or not. And then even caloric excess, because there's research that shows the amount of protein that you take in at a time, or any food for that matter, you can increase digestion rates and uptake rates. So it's a really big across the board kind of thing. And is, you know, to actually say, oh, you can take in as much as 30 grams, that's it. It would be an untrue statement. Now, there is research as to skeletal muscle uptake. And if I can remember correctly, I was trying to cheat right before I answered the question and look it up. But I'm not going to give like an actual definitive. But if I remember correctly, I think that it's somewhere at a maximal of 0.2. Let me just check real quick. I think I got it right here. I think it's something at a maximal of 0.26 to 0.3 grams per, something like that, per body weight. Per hour. I can't remember exactly where it is, but regardless, there's a maximal amount of uptake for skeletal muscle, and I believe that for like someone your size, it would come out to roughly like 230 grams or something like that. But it varies, and we're not seeing like a complete definitive, and it's really hard to test. So the more you eat, the more you can digest, and the more you use, and the more you train, the more you can take in. I think that going by a base of 30 grams per hour or something to that nature is okay. But there's also more than just protein intake or protein uses and synthesis than just intake. There's also the degree of what we create on our own. And the question is really, how much do we need? You know, how much do you need to hit the goals that you're wanting to hit if you're in a deficit, if you're in a surplus? And then it becomes kind of a different question. So I think that staying with the safe and standard, you know, answer of in a day, you know, because there's also how fast you can break it down in a day, sticking to 0.8 to 1 to 1.2 if you're a bodybuilder, a competitive bodybuilder, trainer, things like that, is a safe route to go, and then as you need to increase for performance or just to see how, you know, your training is going and how you respond to that is good. So rather than freak out about the rate of digestion per hour or, you know, how much can I get in a meal, things like that, I like to look at the span of time more than anything else and how much you're getting into a day. And for me personally, from the research I've seen, and Alan Argon does a lot of good research on this as well. He did a good review on it. I like the numbers of in the range of 0.8 if you're just kind of your average couch potato, and if you're actually putting, you know, the weights to good use, then somewhere around 1 to 1.2. And I know I fumbled that some because I was reading and talking at the same time, and that never works well, but hopefully that came out good. And Cass, you can you're more than welcome to throw in your input there, because I know that it's something that you research some too.
I haven't personally researched it, but I've listened to Lane Norton speak a lot on the topic, and
Cass, we can't hear you too well. Did you do you have to unmute yourself again?
Okay, there, can you hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
I had my never mind. I won't even tell you what I'm
saying. Did you not have your headset on?
I had my mic on the top of my head because I was... okay. So I haven't personally researched it, but Lane Norton's group has, and he's well, not Lane Norton, but Donald Lehman's group in Illinois researches protein synthesis and muscle protein synthesis, etc. And he has a – Lane wrote a paper in January of 2009 that said that to finding out how much protein you should take in a meal, you should determine what you need – how much protein you need to stimulate protein synthesis is. So he said that based on the research by other researchers in the United States and Europe, that the maximal – or that – to maximize skeletal muscle protein synthesis, you require about 15 grams of essential amino acids. And that leucine is one of the amino acids primarily responsible for stimulating the effect on producing more protein in the body. So 15 grams of essential amino acids contain about 3.2 grams of leucine. So to determine how much protein you need to elicit the maximal response in muscle synthesis, you must also calculate how much leucine is contained in the source. For example, whey protein contains 12% leucine. Therefore, about 27 grams of whey protein would be needed to consume, or would be needed to consume, to reach the threshold for maximal anabolism. Whereas a source like chicken, which has a protein content of 7.5% leucine, would require 43 grams of protein. So I guess it would depend on what you're having after your meal. That 30 number sort of seems if there's a good article. Maybe Kevin can just put this PDF up on the FitCast. I think I sent it to him too. That shows how much protein you need from various sources like beef, chicken, pork, whey, milk. And the average number is about 30. So that's probably what people came up with. But I've been to other conferences says that you can digest more protein in a meal, like 50, 60 grams in a meal, but you have only a limited amount of protein that you can actually use to make muscle. So the rest of that protein is going to be used for just, I don't know, wasting calories or accumulating extra calories in your body. And it also depends on the amount of muscle you have in your body too. Does that make sense?
Indeed. Well, you're saying that I was pretending like I was twirling my mustache thinking.
Anyway, but I guess this listener's roommate could be correct in a way that, yeah, maybe you can, the best is about 30 grams of protein, but you can get more and use it depending on what the protein source is. Like chicken, you know, 43 grams of protein is what you need to get all the leucine out of that chicken.
Very cool. Next question that we're going to hit on quickly, and you know, also a funny side note, I got an ultrasound this past week, and the woman doing it said that I have the biggest bladder out of anyone she's ever seen, and she wasn't kidding. So for those that complain, I go to the bathroom a lot. It's for you. I do my best.
Wouldn't that mean you have a small bladder if you have to pee often?
I know, but it was like, she's like, it literally goes like halfway up my, like above my belly button, like halfway up my torso. Like it was, I had a like, long story. Never mind. I'm gonna talk about this. That was just funny, fun fact. The next question that we have comes from Jason about no explode. Nothing.
Nothing.
I was checking my current supplement regimen with my cardiologist to make sure I wasn't potentially causing any harm. The doctor okayed my current supplements, but he warned me against no explode. It was on my supplement list because I had taken it a couple years ago. He said they had recently seen a rise in heart problems in patients taking no explode. He said his hospital was currently working on a report to the FDA about their findings, and he wouldn't be surprised to see it get banned soon. What are your guys' thoughts on this? Have you seen any adverse side effects of no explode? Jason, have any of you guys heard about this?
There can be some of the ingredients, I believe, can do slight effects on blood pressure because of its I'm trying to think of the actual ingredients in there.
Arginine?
I didn't know. Yes, I think that, is that what it is?
Pump.
Yeah, the pump, the vascularity of it.
Oh, vascularity, isn't that a great word? I just want vascularity. It sounds so good.
Yeah, but I didn't find anything technical. I'm not gonna lie. I only looked for like 5 minutes though. You know, so I didn't find anything other than anecdotal, I'm not aware of the actual research, that whole not being a doctor thing sometimes. You know, but I guess I could see the where it
the
could
two
have an
doctors
issue
check- laughed. That's the best part. Tony and I were silent, and then Cass and John start laughing.
So, it's only because we know that's bullshit. You don't have to have a doctorate.
I would think that the amount, I mean, some of the ingredients in there are just questionable anyway, and I'm not a no explode fan. So from what I've read, I mean, I could see how it could possibly maybe contribute to something for someone who is sensitive. Check with your doctor first kind of thing. But I don't know, Cass or John, if you know anything about that.
Well, there's a lot of ingredients in supplements that they're not fully tested before they actually get in a supplement. Like Friskolin, it's a weight loss supplement. Mm-hmm. That has blood pressure effects too. It actually lowers blood pressure. And for people that already are hypotensive, it can be problematic. I actually had that problem myself where I took it and I have low blood pressure and I was close to passing out a lot of times, but you don't read that on the label. Careful, this will lower your blood pressure, and if you have hypotension, you should not take it. So it's you know, we're going to see this coming out with more supplements because I think people are on this supplement hate bandwagon lately, especially researchers, and they're trying to really exploit it. And there's a lot of negativism towards supplements nowadays, more than ever used to be.
It seems like he learned his lesson from the no explode though, stopped taking a couple of years ago. I think a lot of people, once they leave college or high school, they stop taking no explode or any kind of NO supplements. At least from the anecdotal evidence that I've seen from where I've been.
Mm-hmm.
Not too good. Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
Ask me a question.
Gotcha. Hey, guys. Big fan of the podcast, especially when Kevin does his voices. They are horrid.
That's sarcasm. He was sarcasming.
So you guys talk about research a lot and going on PubMed. I am a trainer at a commercial gym. Should I be going to PubMed every week to see what the latest research says? Thanks, Grant.
No. Just kidding.
Come on, he asked me. Or I told him to ask me. Come on. The reason why I wanted to answer this is because I think it's one of those things that I battled with a lot, especially like in college when I was still, like, I would talk to Cass and she'd be like, oh, you know, I saw this and this on PubMed this week. I'm like, oh man, I feel like I'm so out of the loop. Like, I didn't know, you know, if I should definitely be keeping up with this stuff. And you know, I think if you're just getting to the industry, you probably have a lot of other stuff you got to get covered first to make sure you know your kinesiology and just basic nutrition and exercise science. But you know, I mentioned it earlier, but I'm not going to be one of those people that, you know, will think like, oh, I wonder if there's a lot of studies on this on PubMed. I mean, maybe I'll get to that at some point in my life, but for now, like, just to stay on top of stuff, I just use Alan Aragon's research review. It's like $10 a month or something like that, and he types it up nice and neat and does a research review and goes through a handful of studies every month. And for me, that's been fantastic. It definitely helps me stay on top of things. And again, like a lot of us don't have access to PubMed, and we don't want to invest the money into spending $100 or $50 to look at a study. And I think, I was actually listening to Lee's book, and one of the things you brought up, Lee, was like, yeah, you have to, when going through research, you definitely can't look at the abstract and then get your conclusion from that. Because a lot
absolutely
of
absolutely not.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Actually, you want to jump in, Lee, and talk about that a little bit?
Oh, well, a big section of the book of what I talk about is how if you're going to read an article or if you're going to read anything and it's talking about the latest research in this or even like anything that we say or just things in general and people are citing some sort of research study that happened, you can't just take that as, oh, that means it's truth. Because I find people fall into that a lot just because an article is like, oh, a recent, research out of, the Journal of Medicine or et cetera, out of this college said this. And then, oh, okay, so since they said this, it must be true. And people just take that at face value. And some people may go as far as to look at an abstract and read the abstract and read the conclusion and think that that conclusion is just it. And it isn't that simple. There's a lot of comparing different research articles and releases, real world things. I mean, it becomes a very big variable thing. You can't just look at one study or one abstract or one article and take any of that as the face value truth. And it's not necessarily something that you even have to do yourself, but you've got to kind of question the validity of things sometimes, and especially when it comes to scare tactics and hot news stories and things like that. That's all.
Grant, mm-hmm. I'm going to advise you to just go to seminars, buy books, and read. I mean, if you're just getting started, then that's probably the best way. You can get a huge-ass chunk of information. You just get a little bit of information about a lot of things and a lot of information about one small thing.
And just to add on that, Kevin, like as far as going to seminars and conferences and whatnot, and the reading, too, but just gradually getting access and familiarizing stuff in general, like just the reading and the conferences. Like, I mean, I'm around Eric all day, and he's like a guru when it comes to shoulders, and I'm nowhere near his expertise with shoulders. But in the time that I've been around him, and just like this article I might read here or this podcast I might listen to here, I mean, just having access to stuff, you're gonna automatically get more. That's what I'm looking for.
Acclimated?
Yeah, acclimated, confident with the material you're trying to understand. I'm like you. Like I don't go to PubMed often. Like I hate reading research. I don't understand most of it. So that's why, yeah, like you, I like going to Alan Aragon's site. There's another one I go to a lot. It's called the Fitness Research Review. Brian St. Pierre has actually done a lot with that. So guys just look at the research that they'll read an entire research article and they'll synopsis it for other people. I'm like you. I like doing that stuff a lot better than just going on PubMed. I mean, I'll go on PubMed if I have to, if I'm writing an article or if I just need little tidbits of information. But like you, I mean, I'd rather go to other people's blogs and research reviews themselves. But just getting acclimated with all the information in general, you're going to get more confident with the material. So,
hey, Cass, I got a question for you. This one is for Cassandra. Can you ask her about how she has changed her training and nutrition during pregnancy? Eventually, when I have kids, I want to know what is best in terms of activity and diet. Thanks so much, guys. I look forward to Monday morning every week. Thanks to the show. Becca. And that's not for me. It's from Becca.
Well, Jonathan Fast is probably rolling his eyes in this whole question because he knows me.
I certainly have no idea what you're talking about, Cassandra.
Yes, we do.
John's going to calm down.
Jonathan likes to comment on my training often and tell me that I'm a moron. Not that I'm a moron. It's just that I train harder than the majority of people would train.
Cass and I box squatted on Monday. It was awesome.
It was pretty awesome, actually. So how did I change my training? In the first trimester, I felt like crap all the time, and I was really tired and nauseous. And sometimes I'd go to the gym and really want to just throw up on the floor, and I'd start working out, and I just left because it wasn't worth it. Then as I got near the end of the first and into the second trimester, I returned back to almost the same amount of training that I did at the same level. I mean, Kevin and I were, like we said, box squatting on Monday, and I was going the same.
Floor pressing.
Yeah, floor pressing. I was doing 4-point rows with, what was that, 40-pound kettlebells or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But
was this when you guys were at the SCP?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we were training.
No, she can't.
No, I know you guys came last weekend or last Monday. Wasn't sure if you guys had another day where you guys trained together.
Yeah, no, it was good. But, I mean, the one thing is I don't recover as quickly between sets. And I get a lot hotter than I think that's actually calming down a little bit, but my body temperature doesn't regulate as well. So I have to take a little bit more time to recover. And then, you know, I don't push myself as hard as I could because we were pulling that sled. Would you have on there for me, Kevin, like 225 pounds when I was pulling that sled?
Yeah.
And I only did 3 sets of that and you kept going, but I was like, no, I'm done. Like I kind of know my limits now. But then I've been focusing more on core work and Kegel exercises. I was just at a women's conference yesterday, and one of the OBGYNs that was speaking was saying that women should start working on Kegel exercises as soon as they, you know, can, and never stop for the rest of their lives because it's important for everything. I also have a really bad back. And I have hip displacement because I have SI joint instability, and it's gotten worse in pregnancy. So I've stopped doing single leg work. So I don't do, even though I was doing it for a while, and then I would get my hips out of place, and Jonathan would yell at me. He'd be like, "Didn't your physical therapist tell you not to do that?" And I was like, "Yeah, but I really wanted to do Bulgarian split squats." And you're like, "Oh, you're a moron." So. And then also, even when I was doing front squats, my hips went out of place. Kevin saw me hobbling around CP, and they hurt for a while. But I've got to keep being strong.
Just for the record, Cass, what was I pulling?
What were you? There were 7 or 8 plates on there, Kevin.
Eight plates.
Yeah, I can't even move
it. And Kevin let it be known, everyone in the gym, that to watch him do the he's like, "Hey, everyone, like, I'm doing sled drag."
No, what? We put the plates on, he would slam them on, so it was so loud.
Because it's like, pulling 8 plates isn't an easy feat.
No, it's not.
That's why I have a calves of a god, you know.
Yeah. Hey, one quick thing. I just want to go back to the research question because I did want to comment on that one. The reason why I said no is after publishing in research, there's a lot of bias in research. And when you go to publish your paper, depending on what journal you're publishing with, sometimes your editor will tell you to put something in your paper you don't really want to put in your paper. And that was always frustrating for me. Like I wrote that paper on nutrition for strength training women with Dr. Volek, and the editors wanted me to talk about B vitamin deficiencies, and I was like, I don't know so much about that. I wasn't really comfortable with even talking about, not that I didn't know about it, but it wasn't really well supported, but the editor wanted me to write about it, and that was the only way they would publish my paper. So that was kind of frustrating. And then with our low carb research, we actually have a study we did on low carb versus low fat and resistance training, we haven't yet published because there's so much discrepancy with it. So, you know, you can read the research, but there's some really bad papers out there, and you have to really know who the person in who's writing it and what other people say about it. And, you know, just be critical and just be aware of what's out there. But remember that one paper isn't the gospel truth. That's why it's called research, because you have to repeat it to find the answer. That's my 2 cents.
I agree completely. I think it's kind of like watching a high diving from the Olympics. Like if you didn't have the commentators, you'd be like, "Oh, that looked like a good dive." You'd have no idea what you're looking at.
So the commentators,
So the commentators are the ones that are experts, and they kind of give you the insight of what's actually going on, and then you can appreciate what you're seeing. I think the same thing is with research. If you're not really familiar with the topic on a level that you can you know, the problem is when people use research to define what they're doing versus mm-hmm. understanding the field and then using that research to then, you know, kind of add in the bits and the pieces. Like people talk about, and you, all the time, you know, you learn stuff in school and then you find out later why it's wrong. But you mm-hmm. need to understand that stuff first, that basis, the things that, that we are discussing before you can go into more detail and say, okay, this wasn't exactly true, mm-hmm. but it gives you enough of an idea to understand why it's not true. If you skip that part, you run into a lot of problems in trying to fill big pictures with details. It doesn't work very well. So I think a lot of times, you know, what you were saying before, Kev, is very good. Like we, as far as an expert opinion, that's actually the lowest level of information that you can get as mm-hmm. far as evidence. But when you don't understand the field entirely, that becomes very useful because it helps for – it's like a professor in school. They're mm-hmm. telling you what the topic is about. You can go on later and start to investigate for yourself. But if you don't have anyone to explain that to you, it becomes more and more difficult.
Yeah, and I'm all for the research, but I like the, you know, hands-on experience when you go see a seminar and someone goes up and says, okay, I did this, this, and this with the client, and this, this, and this happened. And like, okay,
yeah, but that's
I have
80. Variable for each patient, though.
Oh, I understand that. I understand that. But I'm saying if they have 80 athletes and they did this with 80 athletes, like I'm like, okay, I can understand that. I can understand, you know, why that happened with those 80 people.
Like, and you talk about seminars, but encourage people to go to scientific conferences too. Like, go to one scientific conference. You may feel a little weird and not even understand what the heck the people are talking about. Like, I started going to scientific conferences in my bachelor's degree. I remember sitting there going, I have no idea what this guy is saying. Mm-hmm. But then it started building and building and building on it. And that's where you learn. And you get to hear people tell their real life stories, like maybe something they weren't able to publish, you know, and you get to see that work and hear about it on a different level. Because sometimes when you write these scientific papers too, don't feel like you're retarded when you're reading them and you don't understand, because they write them on these levels. Like, you're like, what is that word?
It's so horrible. It's so horrible. It's mind-numbing.
It's not even, yeah, it's not even English. It's like, we're too smart for all of you people, so we're going to make it sound as confusing as possible so you don't fit into our little club. It's like, that's not what you should be doing
Bastards.
Anyway. I don't know. That's just the elitism of science, though. So don't feel dumb if you're reading a paper you don't know what they're talking about. Just try to get the gist of it and read another one, and then you'll get it.
Hey, Tony, you want to ask the next
question? Ask Lee a question?
Yeah, ask Lee a question. John, have you been changing some stuff?
No, I haven't touched anything.
Okay. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, guys. I thought of a question that I haven't heard you guys discuss yet on the FitCast. It's a question about building muscle mass. I've ran into varying opinions on the optimal way to do so. Some believe, typically the old school lifters that I talk to, that the best way to build muscle is to build your foundation first by going through a bulking phase and not really focusing too much attention on your body fat, and then eventually going through a cutting phase to cut down the fat. The other is to get down to a lower body fat percentage. The personal trainer that I had at one time said I should aim to get below 15% before bulking, and that you can build lean muscle while keeping your body fat low. I wanted to get your collective take on it. Thanks, guys. Pete.
I think the problem with questions like this is one, I mean, there's not a definitive answer because really it's so people ask these questions. So what they're really saying is, do I want to get fat or do I not? And then it's like, okay, well, what is your goal? If your goal is to be a strong man, eat and lift, you know, like you want to build mass that way, just eat and lift and just do your thing. And if you want to maintain a low body fat and a lean physique and put on mass in correlation to that, then yeah, you're going to be better off eating and you know, more of a slight surplus and not doing the big, you know, bulk cut thing. I think you're going to find that you're going to, you know, over time, like what you do more, maintain more lean body mass and enjoy your results better. So I think that the question is really, I mean, there are degrees, like for example, there's research that shows that you can maximize, you know, a P ratio and have things do a little bit better with uptaking lean mass and not fat, things going into your muscles versus things being sort of fat. If you do more lean bulks where you do slight surpluses, somewhere roughly depending upon 15 to 10%. I talk about this and recently and gave some figures for both men and women in an article that I did on my blog. I also talk about it in the book, but it's free on a blog. So but anyway, the rates that you can start to work in is somewhere between 10 to 15% of your increase of a daily maintenance. And you can increase at that rate and start to gain mass in that way. I like it for my clients, and what I do with my clients is I start a bulk at lowest body fat possible. So for me, I get people at the lowest body fat that I can get them at, and then I work on increasing lean mass while I can see it, while I can see what's going on. It's easier to kind of rate what's happening if an increase of calories need to happen, because the higher in body fat that you are, the more cloaking happens with water retention, the harder it's to see what's going on with things. The pump is less, severe. I mean, it may seem kind of silly, but doing on a lean gains and already having a low body fat just makes it, in my opinion, easier to read how much your intake is, results, and also can do some suggestions with portioning and things like that. But that being said, the genetics are going to be the major lead of that. So I guess the answer to your question would be if you don't care what you look like, eat and lift. And truthfully, but if you really care about looking lean and ripped as much as possible, then get as low in body fat as you possibly can. And then increase your, caloric intake, protein, et cetera, with the lifting at slow intervals, starting at roughly 10%. And this also, of course, would depend on your training experience, et cetera. If you're a newbie, you're going to gain at faster rates than you are if you're not. So if you want to look at that article, it's on my blog, and it's called The Realistic Realistic Goal Setting for Muscle Gain, Parts 1 and 2. And it gives formulas for both males and females. So there we go.
Anyone else have a comment?
No.
Come on, you guys are the muscle builder, boys.
I'm back.
Kevin's back. Okay, I have a question for John. Hey, guys. I went for a sports massage recently, and the guy doing the massage is also a personal trainer and a major follower of the teachings of Charles Poliquin. Interjection, I just want to tell everyone I met Charles Poliquin. He's a weirdo. Okay, from what I've read...
Wow.
Well, he was just kind of, I don't know, whatever. From what I've read, he is pretty well regarded, but I tend to like to take the best of everyone's opinions rather than follow one true way. Maybe I'm fickle. While I was there, he also started telling me to try biosignature modulation and how I should really have an assessment. It apparently is the only way to eat and would sort out my fat thighs, as would the supplements he could give and special lean legs Yohimbe cream. When I remarked that the diet would probably involve eating less crap, more protein, and fewer carbs, he said I knew nothing. But then he said he doesn't eat carbs except on his cheat day every fifth day. So what do you think? Biosignature, real spot reduction, or just clean eating and good training? Grania. I hope I spelled that right.
Yeah, I looked up biosignature modulation. Of course, I've never heard of it. Cass, did you see that? Or
yeah, I know. Yeah, I've heard biosignature.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything at all in that, or is it?
You know what? John Berardi was telling me that he used to, or he was trying to actually prove if any of this was right, and I never heard him come out with anything. So I don't know if that means it was right or if it was totally wrong, but he didn't want to ditch what Charles was saying. I mean, Charles is very well regarded, but I think some of the stuff he did may have been sort of anecdotal and maybe voodoo. Yeah. And the biosignature is a way of eating that he says, I think it's like if you have certain characteristics of your body, you should do certain things with your diet. But he's very, very, very specific. And I don't know if we've even got to that level of being that specific. No. Like, yes, if you have insulin resistance, you should eat low carb. Or if you're a very lean, lean person, a total carb oxidizer, you don't really need to worry about your carbs or whatever. But, this the Yohimbe cream, I don't know if that may have used to work when it used to actually have Yohimbe in it, but who knows if it actually has Yohimbe in it anymore. And eating carbs on every fifth day, there's a lot of people that cycle their carbs. But I don't know if Biosignature really has as much merit as some people think it does have. And I think it really just depends on the person. I know that's the easy, you know.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I wanted to get your take on it, too, in case there was anything that supported that. So I guess we can agree it's an epic fail. I mean, because the problem with stuff like this, and again, I haven't met him. So Charles Poliquin had some really cool things out there, and then there's some stuff that he seems to go off the deep end a little bit. And I think from what I understand of him, and again, never met the man, so I haven't had a conversation with him. I don't know exactly where he gets a lot of this stuff from. But the problem comes from when you make big statements like that. This is the only way to eat. This is the only thing that works. This is what it is. This is how it is. And you have no evidence for it. None. None. And this is the same kind of stuff that we deal with a lot in questions as far as, you know, oh, I used, you know, product X, or I, you know, listened to, you know, this trainer or whatever, and they solved my problems. You have no idea if it actually worked or not. You don't know the reason why. So unless you, you have, you know, evidence-based information and research saying that, yes, you know, if you have this type of resistance to insulin or this type of allergy to whatever, and we found that these people store fat and this is the way that it works, you have no idea. And does the diet work? I don't know. Do most diet works? They basically do, because you're reducing calories in one way or another. So your magic formula of this, or your way of doing it that way, it's all the same stuff when it boils down to it. It's just different ways of doing it. So when someone who is a massage therapist who – I mean, I don't. Does he have any education, nutrition? Does he have any education in training? Is he just a what's their background? What's their reasoning for being an expert or whatever? And they're telling you this is what it is. Then you know, I tend to not believe it. So I just wanted to make sure, like from everyone else too, that there wasn't anything having to do with this. And then I'm just going to call bunk.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know.
I'll just say, like, you know, anytime, Biosignature, blah, 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 and then at the tail end, it's, oh, but if you take these supplements.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime that's a part of the equation, I'm always reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much experience with the Biosignature stuff, but, you know, when I hear someone say, hey, this guy says this stuff is great, if I take these supplements along with it, it just makes me a little reluctant. I mean,
there's a lot of good that can come out of taking supplements. I mean,
I understand.
I mean, there are, but if your program
takes these supplements,
yes, yeah,
you know, that only I make, and you know, then you're gonna get the results you want. Like, I'm not bashing on supplements at all. I mean, I take them obviously.
Oh, no. And I was just saying it with you, is that supplements can be good, but it seems like people that are really popular have a gimmick, that have something that defines them from everyone else, and that may or may not be right. And Charles Poliquin has been around for a very long time, so we can't discount his experiences in life. Mm-hmm. But he probably did have to come up with something that made him different than everyone else, whether or not it was actually credible, you know, like as credible as it could be, I should say. Because it probably has some credit to it, but maybe not as much as some people think it does. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to put the guy down. I just, because I don't know where he got all his information from, but he has been around a hell of a lot longer than I have. So,
and you know what? There's something that's really good that keeps getting just slammed into my head through my residency. And there's a difference between what you know and what you think. Mm-hmm. And what we know is evidence-based. It is, you know, proven to the point where we have not seen contradictory evidence, or that contradictory evidence is not credible. And then there's stuff that you think, which might not have evidence behind it, or might have limited evidence behind it, but you can't say that you know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the difference here. So when you have someone, you know, I don't care what anyone says, as long as they say, you know what, I'm not sure this is what it seems to be, try it, see what you think, versus yes, this is the way it happens, this is the way it goes, and this is what you must do. Then if you say that, then I want to know exactly how you know that. And the way that it was presented to me from one of my directors, which I thought was awesome. And again, this is more of a physical therapy standpoint. But I had said something was iliotibial band syndrome. And she said, how do you know that? She said, if you're talking to the surgeon, would you feel comfortable in saying, this is what it is, I want you to cut them open and take care of it? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty good. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I can't claim with 100% certainty or 99% certainty this is what it is. I can claim that I saw these conditions. I can claim that these tests were positive, but I can't tell you that I know for a fact. So when someone comes in, especially in the area of like nutrition, you know, mm-hmm. What do we know about any of these fields that we're discussing? In truth, we know very little. We mm-hmm. think plenty, but we know very little. And mm-hmm. you have to be suspicious of things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what is our final answer?
Bunk. Crap. Until
fail.
Otherwise proven. Yeah. Fail.
Fail. So she was right at saying, hey, you know, dude, you're a little weird.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back, and we're going to have a roundtable discussion on our current training regimens. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to do a roundtable discussion because we got everybody here this week. And we're going to talk about what we've been doing currently for training, because we get questions in all the time about training. People asking us about what we're doing as well. So I figured, you know what, it would be a good time to go through that again. So, John, I'm just going to say, are you doing anything?
Barely anything.
What do you do when you do stuff?
Bodyweight stuff. Quick and dirty circuits, but it's been really difficult. I'm not going to lie. It's been exceptionally difficult to not only find the time, but more the energy, after, like a 14-hour day on my feet. So, but when I can, it's got to be like a 10 to 20 minute thing. And that's about it. So push-ups, you know, single leg squats, pull-ups if I can get a bar, that sort of stuff.
Dude, you should really get that perfect pull-up thing for your doorway. Or whatever it's called. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Oh, you should get TRX.
Yeah, I do.
Right?
Yeah, TRX would be awesome. Yeah, I do like it, actually. I mean, it's simple. It works. But yeah, it's hard, and it makes it harder because every day my schedule changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's challenging, to say the least.
John, you know what? Just wake up half an hour earlier, man. That's what you tell everyone else.
And then get only 30 minutes of sleep.
Jonathan, you know, excuses are like assholes.
It's true. Everyone has one.
You've got more than one.
Nice.
Oh. Well,
kidding.
Lee, what have you been up to?
Let's see. I've been trying to force myself to focus on a lot of soft tissue work and stretching and things like that, because it's my Achilles heel, and it's the hardest thing for me to do. So I've been really trying to focus on that a lot, because I'm bad at neglecting the things that I need to do. And then aside from that, I've been doing a lot of just various dancing. I've been focusing a little bit on more power moves for freezes and then I've been trying to do more kind of aggressive stands and mills, but that's not been going very well. It's just very hard for me to do it. I'm still losing fat right now, so body weight is very important. And even like 10 pounds when you're trying to do freezes and windmills and stuff like that, it can be kind of hard. So just been doing that, and then just various like footwork glides and just focusing on that. Because since my ankle's been getting better, and it's just been getting easier and easier to do footwork, which has been like my biggest battle. So focusing on stuff like that. So a lot of my training is based around that. And then a lot of core work. My core got surprisingly weak for like the past year. So I've been kind of trying to build that up again. So a lot of like plank variations. And then I've been getting my deadlifts back too. So yeah, stuff like that. Yeah.
Cass, how about you? And then Tony and I will finish, because we did something together.
Oh.
I don't like where that's going.
Some group squat thrusts.
I've been doing anything that I have the energy to do and as heavy as I possibly can, but my weight is going up almost every single week now. So every time I go to do a chin-up, it gets harder and harder. And some days I can't even pull myself up. So, but I've been just trying to work on, as I said before in the listener question, is lots of core work, lots of stuff with the cables, the kneeling, split stance kneeling, cable press, cable chop, those ones, a lot of planking, and pretty soon here I'm supposed to not be supine anymore, so I've been just trying to do as much supine work as I possibly can and then flip over next month, I guess, apparently. So heavy, as heavy as I can, because I want to be able to go in the hospital and just like squat down, pop the baby out, and go back home.
Like,
wow.
While front squatting, like 135.
Yeah. Front squat 135, box squat it, pop the baby out, have someone catch it, and keep going.
Wow, that's like a...
She ain't kidding either. She really isn't.
Oh, that would be the best if I totally could do it. Yeah.
Very cool.
Have the baby walk right out.
Baby, no, Jonathan said that the baby is going to clean and jerk out the snatch.
I certainly did not say anything like that. I certainly did not.
I was focusing on being professional.
She was so mad at me for that. I thought it was hysterical.
I've been telling everyone, so apparently I'm not that mad at you.
But that I certainly did not say that. So I,
Tony, let's have you talk a little bit about your deadlifting.
Oh man, well. It all started about, well, a couple months ago when one of our clients, Dan, who's a power lifter, his squat is atrocious. So he decided to, I forgot the name of the actual program, but essentially he's squatting four times a week.
Danny Toledano?
Yeah.
Oh, the Russian volume.
Yeah. There you go. But so he was doing that and coming in 4 days a week and squatting up a storm. And Eric had an idea to try to apply that towards a deadlift. So he tweaked it a little bit. And we've been doing that for the past 3 weeks where we're deadlifting four times a week. So, you know, as far as set reps, you know, the 4 days were 10 by 1, 7 by 3, 4 by 7, 5 by 5. And, you know, considering the amount of volume we've been doing for the past 3 weeks, my back feels pretty good. But this past Thursday was the final day of the program, and we're going to take the next few days off. And I guess we're going to test out on Thursday. And Eric's going to try to go for upper 600s, which is crazy. But I'm hoping to get it to my best sumo is 560. Conventional, I haven't tested that, and I don't know how long as far. But I'm hoping to get 550 and maybe 575. We'll see about that. But to go along with what Lee's doing, I mean, I've been focusing a lot on doing more foam rolling and stretching because no one stretches enough, and anytime I go listen to like Gray Cook speak or Mike Boyle speak or whoever, it always comes down to we need to stretch more. So with the amount of volume I'm doing the past few weeks, and particularly the next few days when I'm not going to be doing anything, I'm just going to do a ton of foam rolling and a ton of stretching, and hopefully good things will happen this week. So it should be I'm sure one of us will blog about it, we'll take videos and put them up, so hopefully I don't like shit my spine out on video. But
it's funny you said the word blog and shit in the same sentence.
Oh yeah.
I guess I'm not editing out swears this week, guys. There's like
well, we haven't sworn that much, right?
I would just like to note that I didn't drop one of them, by the way.
Oh
hey,
Angel Lee,
so good.
She has a halo above her head.
Usually not. I'm the one that gets like degraded, so that's why I'm just so happy that it's not me this week.
It's like it wasn't me, that song.
Yeah, it wasn't
Shaggy.
Me.
Hey, and I'll talk about my train a little bit, and then Tony and I will talk about the fight we had on Wednesday briefly. But basically, I've gone back to, and Cass, you know how I talked to you about how like my upper back was bothering me and my back was cracking all the time? Yeah. Completely gone since I went back to full body 3 days a week. I've been doing a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, just, I should say, what the hell, what did I do? I did Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, because I did a Monday, Wednesday, it's just full body, and then nothing really spectacular. And then Thursday and Friday, I've set up a little gym in, or a little training center in my garage, which has been very nice. With I think I talked about the setup earlier, but just doing, you know, kettlebell swings and inverted TRX rows and TRX planks and doing valve slide reverse lunges with a kettlebell held overhead on one side. Very fun. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys ever like train at home, but it just feels so awesome to train in like your garage. Maybe I'm just really messed up, but it just felt like, wow, it's like, it just felt like a very cool experience to not have to drive 30 minutes back and forth to go train, mm-hmm. and still, you know, at the end be dripping sweat while the garage is 50 degrees. Like I was smoked. And then I had so much fun on Thursday, Friday, which is normally like an off day. I'm like, screw it. I went back in and I did some more swings. I did some more planks on the TRX, and also did some burpees, some mountain climbers, and some mobility and some corrective stuff like behind the neck band pull aparts and some X band walks, things like that, which I should be doing more of anyways. But that's a lot of fun. And then on Wednesday, Tony actually came into BSC and he got to train where I train and got to experience, first off, how we have no Olympic barbells anymore, which is awesome.
I was seriously contemplating bringing one with me.
Yeah, I would have been worried because I don't think they would have let you brought it in, but you brought a two board and we got the two board bench.
Yeah, we did.
Which I am still weak as hell. I am just a weak bastard right now. Very sad. Anything else from your experience? Oh, and we finished with the circuit. If
yeah,
Tony,
that,
you want to
yeah,
talk
you,
about that?
Yeah, we I set up we did five stations, right? So we did a plate loaded front squat, TRX row, roll out, med ball stomp, and then kettlebell swings. And we did that 10 reps each. Like I would go, Kevin would rest, Kevin would go, I would rest. But we did it five times through, and I think Kevin almost puked at about round four.
The end of the fourth one, I almost threw up, and then I had to take like an extra 30 seconds before starting again. But man, I miss those. There's nothing to be said about a good like finisher, a good circuit at the end.
Yeah, I mean, what it took us, what, a little less than 10 minutes probably.
Oh, and, yeah, not even.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love doing the finishers at the end. So, I mean, you talk about five. I mean, I'm lucky at the gym because we have the sled, we have the prowler, we can hit the sledgehammer, we can hit the tire with the sledgehammer. So I have a lot of different options. But at a commercial gym, the using the circuit that we use is perfect.
Yeah.
What did you guys do for your finisher?
We started off with a plate-loaded front squat. So I think we had a 25-pound plate.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Then we did a TRX inverted row. Mm-hmm. Then we went to a rollout, an ab rollout. Mm-hmm. Then we did a med ball stomp to the floor. And then we did kettlebell swings.
Okay, can I tell you about my finisher that I just did the other day?
Yeah.
With my training partner, because I couldn't do this myself. So we have a 600-pound tire in my gym. And so my girlfriend and I, we flip the tire back and forth for a minute. Then at the end of our last flip, well, not back and forth, but we flipped it across the floor and then flipped it back. It takes two of us to flip it. And then on our very last one, we left it standing up, and then we push it back and forth for a minute. So she pushes as hard as she can against me, and I push it against her. So you have to catch and resist and then push it back. And then we let the tire fall, and then we both jumped on it for a minute. And then we both grabbed sledgehammers, and we hit it for a minute with the – we have an 18-pound sledgehammer now in our gym. So we did that. It was so fun, and I was so tired.
So wait, you have the tire upright, and you're pushing against each other?
Yeah, well, it's between us, and she'll push it towards me, and I'll catch it, and I'll push it back.
It's rolling back and forth between the two?
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan Faster side.
John's just like, oh, man, I miss doing fun stuff.
No, he's like, Cass is pregnant, shouldn't do that. That's what he's saying.
Mm. Oh, yeah, John.
That's really?
Settle down.
Really?
No, it was really, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't dangerous. It wasn't.
It's not like she had someone throwing a med ball at her stomach the whole time, dude.
No, just a 600-pound tire.
But you catch it with your upper body. I'm not catching it with my belly.
I got to side with John, Cass. You're pregnant.
But right. It's fun, right?
But it was so fun.
Right, right. Again, allow me to reiterate the story of my friend's wife, who was a preschool teacher, and when one of the children smacked her with his little 2-year-old hand in the stomach, she was rushed to the hospital to make sure there was no damage to the baby.
Yeah, and my girlfriend, she has a 2-year-old, and her 2-year-old punched her in the stomach by accident, and she's fine. And she has her now. She has her next kid.
So then she must
not that bad.
Right, right.
A tire wasn't hitting my stomach; it was hitting my. I was stopping it at chest level and pushing it back.
Right. I'm sure the intra-abdominal pressures that you had during this ballistic catching of a 600-pound tire were entirely good for the baby.
Yes, the baby's going to clean and jerk out the snatch.
That's true.
Okay.
Okay, enough picking on me. Leave me alone. Stop.
That's it. We're going to wrap it up there. That's exactly almost 15 minutes. So, thank you so much for listening, everyone, this week. Don't forget to check out Cass's site, John's site, Tony's site, and Lee's site. Almost everyone has their name .com, so that should be an easy setup, and except for John.
Yep.
What's up with that, John?
I don't know.
JonathanFast.com.
Okay. I don't know. I just never set it up that way, and now I'm going to have to buy it from someone. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for checking out the show. Don't forget to review us up on iTunes. And until next time, John.
I'm Jonathan Fass.
No, that's
Sandra Forsyth. Come on, that was in alphabetical order.
Yeah, it was.
All right, John.
Please adopt your next pet.
Buy a Chorky. I'm Cassandra.
Don't buy anything, Cassandra.
What about a Chia Obama?
Oh, but I bought the puppy that needed to be bought. I paid for... No, it wasn't from a pet store.
Who was it from?
John, what the hell, man?
It wasn't from a pet store. I bought it from this woman. She breeds dogs as a living. Like, not breeds them, but she has a whole bunch of dogs. That's, like, how she makes her money, because she got really sick when she was a nurse and couldn't work in nursing anymore. Yeah, so she started raising lots of dogs.
Yeah, but then the dogs are dying in pounds every day.
But she saves them from pounds, and then she'll breed dogs.
It's like getting a refurbished dog, dude. There's nothing wrong with that.
Getting a
refurbished dog.
Manufacturer refurbished.
God.
Yeah.
All right. For this episode, I'm Kevin Larry, and we're going to get out of here. Thanks again for listening. I apologize for how it ended, and I will reprimand John for next week. Take care. John, you sure? I'll give you 2 seconds if you want to say something good.
Go Yankees.
Okay, we'll edit that out. All right, welcome to the off-topic that we're recording in the middle of the show. Because otherwise people will get mad. But because we've had reviews on iTunes that say that we go, we're too sporadic and that we go off topic too much. So I'm going to get it out right here so I don't do that. So anyways, think about this in Back to the Future or any kind of time traveling movie. Or if this was like a show, like I was thinking of possibly like this new show that's out, Stargate Universe, that I think is really good.
My dad was talking about that. He said it was good.
It's pretty good. You know, it's like a crappy Battlestar Galactica. And
nice.
But with Stargate people. And the you know, if you ever end up time traveling, whether you guys happen to do it in real life or it happens on a movie and you miss the exact date that you're trying to get to. And oh no, the reason why I brought this up is I watched the season 2 finale of Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles on Blu-ray last night. And, you know, for the date, for, like, time traveling, they just put in, like, 2012. Like, they don't even put in an exact date. They just put in a year. Like, they're going to this year. Like, that's very inaccurate. So, I mean, like, if you ever went overboard, like, you could just say you, like, overflexed it. I don't know. That's not funny. I thought it would be funny, but it's not. It's, like, a little too much flexing going on.
Wow. So, Cass.
Yeah?
I went to the puppy show.
Oh, what did they have?
They had like 200 breeds of dogs. They had like, I don't know, a whole bunch of cats, which you don't even think of as breeds. You just think of these little cats, and they're all different breeds there, and it was amazing. It was actually amazing. Mm-hmm. I spent like 5 hours walking around and petting dogs. They had French bulldogs. They had American bulldogs. They had Staffordshires. They had bull terriers. They had I was actually puppied out.
Wait, so Leah and I are the only ones that have dogs, right?
I have a dog.
You have a dog?
I have two dogs, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Both my parents have dogs. I mean, I kind of I watch them.
Lee, what kind of dog do you have?
Pound puppy mutt.
Pound puppy mutt, right.
He's just the cutest little, like, I mean, he's the 1001 things. There's so much stuff in him.
That is a cute dog.
He is just my baby.
Isn't that the best when your dogs are your children, pretty much?
Yes. And I am one of those people, and I don't care if anyone wants to make fun of me.
Oh, I'm totally so like that with mine. My husband's like, would you stop molesting the dog? Because I'm like, oh, he's my baby. We're like making out in the kitchen, and he's like, would you stop it? I'm like,
I don't know,
right,
Kaz. I think that goes beyond child.
maybe not in the South Lake, but
oh, you went there?
I did.
You went there.
I did.
Jerk.
That's right.
Did you really?
Well, John,
not?
Did they have a Chorky? A Taz?
My dog. Why were you at the dog show?
No, they didn't because they didn't have any mixed breeds. They were all pure breeds. They were the Kennel Club, the acknowledged Kennel Club breeds.
Well, mixed breeds are the bestest.
Hey, Tony, do you want to set up
Was this a show where you went to see all these puppies and people buy the puppies? Or is
no, it was hosted by the American Kennel Club and the like Cat Fancier Society. I don't remember the name of the society, but it was basically like – it was almost like a dog and cat show, but you actually went and met the breeds and like all these like champion dogs that they show and stuff. Like they're sitting there on the you know, they're – owner's lap, like, you know, and you just go and you pet them and you learn about the breeds, and they have all kinds of like information. So if you want to, you know, if you want to have one of those breeds as a pet, it gives you information on what they're good at and what kind of, you know, they're good with children, they're good with, you know, protecting, you know, whatever it was. And it was awesome, but you saw a lot of breeds that you've never heard of before, and they're just amazing dogs. So very cool. So I mean, I came home and I went to my parents' house for dinner, and our dogs were like in puppy heaven. They were like just, I mean, they must have sniffed me nonstop for like 10 minutes. Like, what are all these wonderful smells on you? It was great.
John, you have to get a dog.
I have to get, so I've decided I'm getting an American Bull, a French Bull, and either a Bull Terrier or American Staffordshire. I'm going to have three. Oh, yes.
What about a Canadian Bull?
I'm going to have three puppies, yep. Because the French Bull, they're all like small, medium dogs. Dude, I'm used to like 110-pound dogs. Those are tiny dogs. They'll be fine. Plus, if I'm at work,
I would love to have a dog to just bring to work every day and just chill out at the gym. That'd be awesome.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Hey.
Good. I bring my dog to the gym with me. He looks at me
We have a client, Danny, who has a big Rottweiler named Maximus. And like legit, like and Kevin knows who Danny is. And, I mean, he's a pretty hardcore guy. And the dog, he feeds the dog nothing but fish oil.
Grass-fed beef.
And ground grass-fed beef. Like, this dog is jacked. it's a very friendly dog. Like, he'll come in, and Danny will be doing, like, trap bar deadlifts, and the dog's just, like, laying next to him. And he's, like, he's very friendly. Like, everyone walks up to him and pets him. He's only brought him in, like, 2 or 3 times. But I was like, man, we need a full-time dog for the gym.
What would Eric say about that? Yeah, exactly.
Hey, John, did you see I removed that thing from Skype?
After
Lou Schuler, I know, I think Mike Robertson called me out on this or something.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay, yeah, there you go. So I see that now.
You're welcome.
Oh, thanks. I was
trying to warn other people, but you're welcome.
Just, right, I appreciate that.
Just watch it, all right?
See, that would be an example of the stuff that people complain about the in-jokes and no one understands. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Well,
Kevin, for the listening audience that has no idea what Kevin's talking about, which, by the way, and incidentally, is not that uncommon. In this case, Kevin was talking about a slur and slander of my character that he put as his Skype message for like months.
No, I think it was a solid year.
Yeah, it probably was.
Because I don't recognize it because it doesn't show me it on the Mac. So I don't like manually go into my profile and change it.
I was actually wondering about that. I was like, wow, he's really keeping this up for like a year, and I thought it was funny, but
hey, you know what's funny? And that's a great movie, Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Oh.
God, I want to watch that movie again. I ordered it on Blu-ray, so I think I might as well pop it in and watch
Speaking
it.
Speaking of movies,
you know the bad guy in that movie, Kevin, I saw when I was flipping the game show channel was on Hollywood Squares. And it changed everything for me.
Which?
I couldn't look at him the same.
The Asian bad guy?
The Asian bad guy, you know, the guy that's like, you know, the wannabe Justin Timberlake, you know, that like looks down as he looks up at you. Yeah. Which I can mock that very well. Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to know that, let you know that he was on Hollywood Squares, and that just totally took his like gangster Asian badass flair away.
Was he like, oh yeah, where's Whoopi Goldberg?
His name's Brian.
Oh, yeah. Whoopi Goldberg was there, by the way, at the puppy show.
Oh.
Yeah, she walked right past, and there were people like trying to take her picture and stuff. I was like, "Huh, it's Whoopi Goldberg."
Who used to be the center square on Hollywood Squares?
Yeah, it's never go for the center square, guys. I don't get what people are thinking when they play Hollywood Squares or Tic Tac Toe, and they go for the center square. Didn't they learn that in like second grade that is a bad
side
move?
Squares. It's always about the side squares.
Always the side squares, because then you have two paths. Mm-hmm. You have two paths towards righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Tacto mastery.
So that's it. You know, I just wanted to get that out of the way. I might. Brian T is his name. He played DK.
Oh, okay. Well, he was on Hollywood Squares.
That's crazy. He was also in Saints Row 2, a video game.
Oh.
And Entourage.
Oh.
Internet. Cass, have you missed this off-topic discussion that we have?
I'm listening. I don't know.
This isn't one of our better ones.
Squares. I just I don't know the way to play it. I'm sorry. I don't watch TV.
You know what? For people out there, and John, you should pick this up. Did you get a PlayStation 3 yet?
Not yet.
Dude, Uncharted 2, holy crap. Like, me and my client talked about that for a straight hour while training yesterday. We're like, yeah, dude, Uncharted 2 is the greatest thing ever.
What's the synopsis?
Well, basically, it's like Indiana Jones, a video game that's like Indiana Jones. It's very cinematic, and it's got great voice acting. It's even got Claudia Black, who you might know from... what was she in? Farscape, I think that's what it was called.
Is that the one with the commercial where the guy's like, hey, my girlfriend thinks this is a movie?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that's a great commercial.
Is that sarcasm?
No, that really is a great commercial.
No, it really looks like a movie. Like, it's very cinematic, and it's a ton of fun to play. Like, I'm trying to get through it at like an hour at a time, but it's unfortunately I haven't had a ton of time in the last couple of days. But hopefully I'll get through some of it today after we do this. Man, that's it. I got really nothing else. I ordered some more Spike. I've been ordering like a case every 3 weeks. It's probably a bad sign.
Oh my God, that's an insane amount of Spike.
So Kevin Tony, let's talk about the Yankees.
Hey, Kevin Tony. Actually, I haven't watched it, but I heard they were up 2-0. And
they are. Dude, the games have been epic.
I got home last night from going out to eat and saw. I watched a little bit of the ninth inning. And it was
nice. Family photo is off today. I don't have to go to it. the photographer's ill. That's awesome. Oh, and also, I'm going to see, not to butt in on you guys, but I'm going to see Paramore on Monday with some CP athletes or clients. I'm pumped about that.
Nice. Paramore. Who are you going with? Steph and
Carrie. And Pete.
And Pete?
Yeah, Pete's going with what's her face?
Catherine?
Yeah, this is about as inside baseball as it gets, but yeah. There's like five people at CP that do listen to this, so it's for you guys. I don't know.
Hey, for Halloween, are any of you guys dressing up?
I want to be a Ghostbuster so bad. I was on eBay a couple weeks ago, and I was looking at the proton packs. Like, there's people that make actual proton packs, and like, there's a couple of different varieties. Like, you can get the like the blow up proton packs, which are like the recreated ones. It's let me see. I gotta find them on eBay. They run about $600. And I was thinking, if I did buy one, I could use it for Halloween and then just sell it again online.
You're not going to be a Hooters girl again this year, Kevin?
No Hooters girl. You know, I was thinking...
We have to figure out what we're going to make our interns dress up as this year. We have to make our... We're already planning our trip to Hooters on Halloween night, but I don't think we're going to make them dress up as Hooters girl.
Yeah, my friend won't be there, so...
Okay, what's Lee going to be? Lee, talk.
Oh God! You know, I don't know what I'm gonna be. I haven't even given any thought. Usually, I'm pretty big on it. I don't know. My best year was when I was a hoe, though. I'm not gonna lie.
A hoe?
You were a what?
Yeah, my friend was my pimp, and then we had another friend who was a cop, and so we just walked in, you know, around together, and we went into a gas station. And I went up and I got like my cigarettes, and the guy was, and this is when I used to smoke and I don't smoke anymore, but the guy was like, you know, hey, how you doing, and kind of looking at me a little funny. And then my friend walked in right after, and he like freaked out because he thought he was a real cop and thought that he was like trying to get me for like solicitation. You never beat that. I was like 19, but that was my best year, and I haven't really done anything ever since.
Okay, I have the best costume this year. So, because I'm pregnant, I'm going to be an oven with a bun in it.
Shut up.
Are you serious? And my dogs are going to be my loaves of bread. So I've been saving bread bags. Of course, Ezekiel bread and stuff like that. And they're all going to be plastered with bread bags. I'm so excited to be an oven with a bun in it. Especially since my...
That is the cutest thing I've ever heard of.
It's disturbing, I know, but it's okay.
My backup choice is to be Jessie from Saved by the Bell when she got addicted to caffeine.
Oh my God, I can sing the whole song.
I'm so sad.
I'm so scared. I'm scared.
Oh, it's a good thing Zach was there. You know, otherwise she probably would have killed herself.
Was caffeine she was addicted to?
Yeah, oh, she was addicted to caffeine pills.
It was like one of the best ever. How did that song go?
And there was like her, Jesse, I mean, her, Kelly, and Lisa were starting a band, like for some reason, that cover band.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually going to get signed to a like a record label. But unfortunately, due to Jesse's caffeine addiction, they never got signed. And this is the other one I was looking at. It's $2,500, but I don't think I could recoup the cost of a $2,500 proton pack.
Damn, even the other one for $450, I mean, it's awesome, but damn, wow.
It lights up, like, the lights actually work like they're supposed to, like, they light up one at a time on the bottom four.
Oh.
Wow, God. That's
epic. $2,500 for a proton pack.
No, but it...
I'm not saying it's not cool.
It catches ghosts.
Yeah, it's true. Does it actually catch the ghosts? For $2,500,
yeah,
it actually
then you
catches
but the trap is like, it's like 5 or 6 Gs, man. And then you can get the nuclear proton accelerator license things.
What kind of sane people? That's an awesome proton pack, though.
Did anyone see the Saved by the Bell reunion? Obviously, I missed that after talking about this on the show.
No, I really I didn't know why. I just know that Screech was upset that he wasn't invited.
Yeah, I'll find that, and because it was on Jimmy Fallon.
Screech says porn or something.
Yeah, and he's writing his tell-all book.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know what you're going to tell, but...
Everyone was mean to me.
Saved by the Bell. I'm sure there's lots of...
Allegedly. You have to make sure we say allegedly with this, because then if you want some money, you'll try to...
Allegedly.
I'm pretty sure he did the porn. I don't know if there's anything alleged about
that. Yeah, no, he did the porn.
It was allegedly on Celebrity... what was it called? Celebrity House Club or something like
Big
that.
Club.
No, he was on that, but he was on the VH1 show too. Celebrity.
God, what the hell are we talking about? And why is anyone listening to this?
Let's end this. We're going to go back to the mailbag. Sorry, this this a failure.
This is epic fail.
John, you need some epic new material, dude.
No, I don't. You need to stop failing.
How did I fail for this? All right, three. We're at mailbag. Three. Hold on. Shut up, John. John, shut your mouth. You okay, John?
Yeah, it was funny. Like Tony's random laugh. Out of nowhere.
What, my random laugh?
Yeah, it's just that. Like, you need to stop failing, and then I got your approval, and I appreciate that.
That was funny. I give credit where credit is due. I'll laugh.